Welcome into the Follow On podcast here on followoncricket.com. Chinmay Vaidya, Ashay Chavan here with me. We are recapping the World Test Championship final. It's been about a week and we took some time to reflect and soak in all the information and understand what happened. And we're here to discuss that now. Anish, after picking India to win the final, decided to sit this one out. So it's just Ashay and I. We both picked New Zealand to win, and that's exactly what happened. New Zealand ends up defeating India by 8 wickets. They win on the reserve day. So there did need to be that reserve day used in the final. But New Zealand is finally a world champion. Ashay, your thoughts just on the final as a whole and how the match played out?
As a whole, I think picking New Zealand was, you know, people were questioning them playing 3 pacers and no spinners. And people also question India playing 2 spinners and, you know, 3 pacers. Could have used that batting depth, could have used, obviously, Jasprit Bumrah, like, asked him, like, were kind of, you don't question Jasprit Bumrah, but he was not going in form. So obviously it's very, very tough to get back to form for a one-off final. When it comes down to it, New Zealand just optimized and just played better in every category, planned better. Their young guns. Kyle Jamieson got out Kohli twice each innings. So I think they just showed why they were in that final and showed that they could win at a neutral venue.
Yeah, I mentioned in the preview podcast that India may have the best individual player in Virat Kohli, but 1 through 11, New Zealand, I think, had the better team, and they showed that in that Test Championship final. You mentioned the questions about the selection and specifically India's selection, because I think that was the big talking point for a lot of people, was picking the second spinner, which in reality, look, I talked about this on the preview podcast. I said India's going to pick an all-rounder, and whether that all-rounder bowls spin or pace, it doesn't really matter because they're there to bat. And Ravi Jadeja was that guy who was going to be that additional batsman for India. And frankly, he didn't deliver. And not many of the Indian batsmen really did deliver. I mean, they struggled for much of the second innings, and even in the first innings, they had that collapse after looking in a pretty decent position. They were 146 for 3 and then just got all out, you know, 217. So it looked like they were in a great spot both times, but that middle order just proved that it wasn't good enough. And Rishabh Pant in the second innings, I mean, he could have held on for a little longer, but look, I think the selection process was fine. I just think India did not play that well down the stretch when they needed to in key moments.
I think that last, basically you could almost say that it came out to the last day, obviously, but you could say it came out to a session where India realized that, okay, in their last batting session, Pujara was just plodding along, had no intent. The tail, like, Rahane did well. Kohli, you know, all these guys got good starts but didn't capitalize. Same with Rohit Sharma. So they really weren't playing like a, you know, top of the table championship belonging team. They were just outfoxed. Whether like they didn't get enough warm up games or the rain, you know, just kind of messed with their tempo. All of that could be taken into account. But given like, you know, India's heroics recently in the last 7-6 months in down under in Australia and in England earlier, they really should have kind of carried themselves as like a championship team. Like, they look like they belonged. It almost came down to that last hour where there was a couple of drop catches, their heads were down, and New Zealand kind of just was able to capitalize on that, and they couldn't break that last partnership. Obviously, well-deserved, the two, you know, giants of New Zealand, Kane and Ross Taylor, they both have said that this really made up for that heartbreaking final 2 years ago, but kind of, it just kind of has a ring to it to say New Zealand is their first trophy.
Yeah, and look, I think that sentiment was there that this was going to kind of wipe away the memories of the 2019 final. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that still is going to be there for a lot of players. And I think that's still going to sting. But this is a good kind of completion of a process for New Zealand, if you will, a process that started in 2015 with the World Cup and Brendan McCullum, that they were going to play fearless cricket, that they weren't going to play this boxed-in style where they kind of fundamentally pushed their way to a few wins but didn't really take it to the next level and beat some of those top teams. And that changed the entire psyche of New Zealand cricket. You see it with players like Devin Conway and Kyle Jameson coming in. Even a guy like Henry Nichols, who really raised his profile over the last couple years, I think it's really changed the way New Zealand cricket operates. And we saw it even in this test match, even in this final. Devin Conway was not in the picture at all for basically, you know, 23 months. He was not in the picture at all when it came to New Zealand test cricket. But he had a brilliant innings against England. He had a brilliant performance in both test matches against England. And Kane Williamson backed the form. He said, look, we're going to go for the win here, and we're going to back the hot hand. We have an open spot, and we're going to give it to Devin Conway. Kyle Jameson, obviously, has been more successful over a longer period of time, but also still a relatively young gun when it comes to this New Zealand team. And you see a process that has taken probably a little more than six years, you see it finally pay off, and the core team of, you know, Kane Williamson, Ross Taylor, Tom Latham, Henry Nichols, Tim Southee, Trent Bolt, Colin de Grandhomme, even Neil Wagner, who was the big test bowler that they've had for a long time, who's almost exclusively a test player at this point. BJ Watling in his final match as a cricketer for New Zealand, that was also big for him. So I think it was good to see kind of that core group of players who will still be around for a couple years win this trophy and complete sort of a process that Brendan McCullum started. And you mentioned Kane Williamson and Ross Taylor at the end for the partnership. I mean, you can't write it up any better than that.
You mentioned something that I want to piggyback off of, and which is Kane Williamson backs form. We've seen so many teams and countries do this, with the exception of India. They've never backed form. They've always backed brand names who will perform, you know, at some point or another, and keep kind of letting these players live off to the legacy. You can chalk it up to a cultural difference, whatever you want to call it. But, for example, just bring Bumrah. Just because he's Bumrah, like, no disrespect, you should bring in someone who has, what have you done for me lately? Same thing with Jadeja. He's been kind of, you know, up and down, not the most consistent. Rishabh Pant, okay, you need some of that cricket sometimes, that take chances, that positive inside cricket. You could turn the match. But what about, Pujara? He hasn't done that well lately. He hasn't scored that many runs. Rahane, okay, Kohli hasn't scored a century in, what, like 90 or, 70-something international innings, last 20-something international innings. So you got to kind of, obviously you're not going to sack Kohli, but look up some of these, selection strategies and not just let people live off of 3 years ago run up form. And also I think they got outboxed where, and after the first session when India was 90-something runs ahead in the morning session that sixth day, they went to lunch on a decent partnership from Rishabh Pant and Jadeja. Rahane never looked settled before that, but after that, New Zealand brought in Neil Wagner, and it is the classic trap, the fast bowler trap, where, they put in a short leg and a fine leg, and barrage or support bouncers, knowing that he'd go for it, hoping to connect. Of course, eventually, he gives a catch, easy catch, and you kind of just fall for that fast bowler trap. So you just can't, you can't have, inconsistencies, and these players who don't necessarily know test cricket strategy.
You mentioned the run-up at the end and kind of the way India batted on that final day, and that was, again, another talking point, kind of a question mark as to what India did on that final day. And we talked about this when it comes to playing for the draw, playing not to lose, where India could have possibly, staved it off a little bit longer, played a little better, and maybe had a draw at the end. Now, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I think New Zealand bowled beautifully, and I think the four pace bowlers that New Zealand has, I mean, that's going to be very difficult to navigate for anybody, especially in the conditions that were presented to the players. But I do think that India could have offered a little more resistance on that reserve day. So I do agree with you there. I think there was some questions about the approach. But ultimately, I think, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due. And that goes to the New Zealand fast bowlers. I mean, those four pace bowlers took all of India's wickets in both innings. No one else got on the wicket totals. So I think those four deserve all the credit for taking out the Indian team. I want to mention something that Virat Kohli said off the bat in his kind of post-test match press conference, and that was sort of, this is like, this World Test Championship is bringing test cricket back, or like establishing test cricket as a format for players to aspire to. And, you know, we've talked about this test championship having importance, but where do you think this stands now after what happened in the final? Where do you think the World Test Championship stands? Because as we've talked about, it's good to see, but there's also some significant hurdles that need to be cleared out in the next couple months.
Which is always a tough question. Like, you're basically asking, is test cricket alive and well, like, due to this tournament? Yes and no. The thing is that test cricket will always have its backers. You know, whatever you call it, so-called purists of the game. It's just like India will pour money into it, so will Australia, so will England, you know, big three. And the World Test Championship, to a T, will literally always have one of those three teams in the final, if not two of those three teams in the final. Because there's no other countries that really give money to the game. Like, they see that, oh, there's like, what, like 1,000 spectators, non-COVID time. Oh, there's 1,000 spectators that come to the game? Great. Cool walk in the park for these spectators, but obviously we're not going to make money off it. Let's just have a bunch of T10 and T20 leagues fund our domestic circuit, find players that way. So I know we can always just drill down into the nuances of this question. Will it ever die? No, because of all of the backing. Will there be people who are still watching it? Yes. But it's always going to be, only thing it does is makes these bilateral series have more meaning. That's basically it. Which, like, I'm not going to complain about that. That's cool. Because obviously otherwise you're going to see players not sign up for test cricket, not represent their countries, and just go make money in the T20 leagues, which to each their own. So, I mean, that's a roundabout way of answering your question. I think it did.
Yeah, I think it did as well. And I do think that it offered some meaning to test cricket as a whole throughout the year. And you put that championship out there and all of a sudden there's a possibility of winning a world test championship, which I think a lot of players still view test cricket as kind of the purest format of the game and the toughest format of the game to win at. And so they want to succeed in that format if possible. And I think it does add some value, the championship does, but like I mentioned, there's some things that still need to be fixed. And the ICC has gone ahead and decided that every single test match played in the next test championship circuit, no matter if it's a 2-game series or a 5-game series, will be the same number of points. And the calculation for the two finalists will still be percentage of points won rather than total points. So we're already seeing some change, but there are other things that need to be changed. I'll start with you, Ashay. What are some other things that you would like to see changed in the World Test Championship format or test cricket as a whole?
Non-one-off finals, but the issue with that is ICC/BCC already is taking it too far, and they're now thinking of doing every single tournament has a best-of-three final, which is kind of dumb because, you know, that really takes away the randomness, the any given day type of sport. So, like, I'm disagreeing with that. I think a one-off final is fine, especially given that it's a 5-day final. Why does it matter? Like, I don't understand why you need 15 days, basically, to kind of carry that logic over. Oh, you need a best-of-three final for the World Cup? No. You can't have that. Like, I think it literally gives everybody a fair shot. Already, like, all these, kind of, you can say, minnow countries don't have a shot. They have to go through all these hoops and hurdles to, you know, even be a part of the Champions Trophy or the World Cup or the T20 World Cup or, hell, this Test Cricket World Test Championship. So I'm saying leave it as it is. Like, why do you always have to have, you know, more money? Obviously, the answer is money, but best of three, best of whatever. So I would say leave that the same. I honestly don't know what a more balanced home and away schedule, a better way of calculating the points instead of a percentage. I think we talked about some on the past podcast, but that pretty much that's what I would say.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. It's funny how every time India loses one of these competitions, the Indian cricket machine always finds a way to take it one step too far. There was talk of the qualifiers format being applied to the World Cup, which is just nonsense. Best of three series in a World Cup, a limited overs World Cup would just be insane. For Test cricket, I don't think the three test match series is a bad idea, just because, you know, all the calculations that have been done for this Test Championship have been done in series. So I'd be okay with it being a three-match series for the final. If they don't have enough time in the calendar, which in my opinion is a nonsensical excuse, because you can always find time in the calendar. But if that's the excuse, then I would say just have a timeless test for the final if it's going to be a one-off. It doesn't matter how long it takes to complete it, but make sure that you get a result. Ultimately, the weather is something that you can't control. Bad light, however, it's 2021. No match should ever be called off due to bad light. No match should ever be called off due to bad light. I think that's just absolutely dumb. There's so much that we've done technology-wise, even the pink ball with a day-night test. Bad light is just a bullshit excuse, in my opinion. It's nonsensical. We should no longer have to stop play due to bad light. Install a couple more floodlights if you need to. Change the ball if you need to. It's not a big deal. I think everyone would be for it to continue to keep the game going. So whether you can't control, I'd like to see bad light be eliminated as a reason for stopping play. I'd like to see home and away tests have different value. I think there's more value in winning a test match away from home than there is at home. So I'd like to see those points be adjusted. And I'd also like to see a draw have less and less value. I don't think that you should be able to get a third of the points if you draw a test match. I think it should be even less than that. Don't incentivize the draw. I think there should be more incentive in going for the win, even if it is a different style of play in test matches. I think that the draw is kind of a cop-out at this point. So those are some things that I would like to see happen in this World Test Championship, because the number of matches, that's determined by the different boards with their normal schedules. So that's something that the ICC can't control. And there's always going to be different numbers. So, like, for example, in this past circuit, I believe India played 17 tests and I think New Zealand played 11 tests. And granted, there was, you know, the public health crisis, which contributed to that. So I think this situation was a little bit different. But it was also good to kind of get some of these issues ironed out for future circuits. And, you know, before we jump into the next topic here, I do want to say that we do kind of take jabs at the ICC and BCCI and sometimes some of these other bigger cricket boards. But I do think that how all these organizations have navigated through the pandemic to eventually get to a point where they were able to put on this championship, I think that's something that, even in a limited fashion, deserves some sort of praise. So I do think that there does need to be some acknowledgement that ultimately this was pulled off in spite of some pretty daunting obstacles. Your concluding thoughts on the World Test Championship, Ashay?
Glad it exists. Glad it happened. Honestly, happy for New Zealand. Their trust the process paid off. Sad about India, poor management, the largest country in the world. You can't, like, you're getting outmatched on talent scouting. That's just sad.
Let's move on now to some cricket news that's happened before we kind of wrap things up. So India will now play England in a series that will kick off this next test championship cycle. Do you like India in that? They've historically not done well in England, but this England side is also coming off some pretty big defeats at the hands of New Zealand. So who's your pick in that one?
Honestly, I'm going to go with India because, you know, I think they learned from their mistakes. Bumrah will be hopefully healthier. Bhuvanesh will be healthier. I don't see why they repeat their mistake of playing two spinners. Shubman Gill is out, but now Gail Rahul can come in and give away a wicket in the second over. So, but yeah, that means I still pick India.
Yeah, I think India does bounce back after this Test Championship defeat and goes on to win that England series. India's kind of second team is playing in Sri Lanka. Who are you excited to see in that limited overs series? I'm really excited to see Prithvi Shaw and see how he performs. If he gets an opportunity, those will be some interesting times for him at the top with Shikhar Dhawan, who's his IPL mate at Delhi. So I think that partnership will definitely be interesting to watch.
100%. It should be a good preview for the IPL partnerships, which, by the way, is continuing in UAE.
That's another thing that we're jumping to. IPL restart is happening. You think it's a good idea? You think they should wait a little bit? Or you think that whatever fashion they can get the tournament done, they get it done?
So, rhetorical question, because regardless of whether or not it's a good idea or not, they're always going to try to go ahead with it. So just accept it, I guess. Having it in Dubai, UAE, is fine. It's a step up. Then having it in India, where people are still only like, what, 6 or 7% vaccination rate. Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine. It should be entertaining. I honestly don't know how they make time on this calendar, but, like, yeah, they're getting paid, but they're also having a very hectic cricketing schedule, and they're living the bubble life. Can't be the best, optimal for mental health, but I guess that's what we are, you know, that's how the fans, the demand is there, so it'll always be there.
Yeah, and the World Cup, the T20 World Cup, which India was originally scheduled to host, is supposedly going to take place in the UAE as well. BCCI has sent out that information to the other associations that's the plan, that immediately after the IPL concludes, I believe a couple days after the IPL concludes, that the T20 World Cup will start. And honestly, if a lot of the international players are going to be there, I think that's a good move. They'll have to squeeze it in that month or so, but I think that's the right move. You think that's the right plan, or again, same thing as the IPL. You think whatever the fans demand, that's kind of what the players have to do at this point.
So the thing that is kind of makes me crack up, makes me laugh, is original T20 World Cup. It was going to be 2020 and 2021, right? And the 2020 was supposed to be in Australia. India switched it, and they said they wanted to host the T21 in India. 2020 year edition in India. So now they're still branding as a T20 2020 World Cup. But India lost it in spite of them rallying to, you know, switch those two tournaments around for some reason or another. I guess we'll never know as the public why that happened. And so my guess is that Australia's going to get screwed here and might lose the next year's edition of it. It might go to India just because, you know, BCCI.
Yeah, we never know. We never know with the way the money works. We never know. Honestly, I would not be surprised if that did happen, but it would be interesting. I don't think the ICC would allow that. I think that they've already moved the tournament once, and I know that, you know, the public health situation, that's kind of pandemic changes everything, and maybe there's an exception there, but I don't think an exception can be made for this type of, you know, basic like juggling around that's been going on. They've already done some switches, and it is what it is. You kind of, the chips have fallen now. And I think the 2022 World Cup, which was originally going to be the 2020 World Cup, got moved to 2022 in Australia. I think it will happen in Australia. I don't think they'll be able to switch that out. We got a lot of cricket to look forward to here in the next couple months, Ashay. One thing that you're keeping an eye on in these next couple months with the tests coming up, India's second team going to Sri Lanka IPL and T20 World Cup, what's something that you're looking forward to?
I mean, the more cricket, the better for me. I'm blessed to have this much to watch, follow, and talk about. And, you know, honestly, just excited for all of those. Excited for the Test series. We'll see if India, they're young guys, they can step up again. Show that they can, barring the final. Looking forward to Mumbai, extending their dominance in the IPL. And then, honestly, I think the T20 World Cup will be a shit show because it's on two venues. You never know what those pitches are going to deteriorate to, like, by the given the final time.
Yeah, who knows? Ultimately, with how much cricket's going to be played in the UAE up until that T20 World Cup, who knows what that's going to look like by the final, but I guess we'll see. My big thing that I'm looking forward to is the IPL restart, because if you remember the NBA restart that happened in the early days of the pandemic, teams looked totally different when they had stopped the regular season to when they came back into the bubble and played again. And I want to see if that will happen to some of these IPL teams that are coming off a pretty substantial break. Some of them are playing, you know, some of those guys played in England. Some of them will be playing in Sri Lanka. So they'll be playing cricket ahead of time a little bit. But I want to see how that big break affects them when they come back into that IPL lifestyle. And granted, it's UAE, so they are familiar with it because they had to do it last time around. But I do think that there will be some rust there. And I'm interested to see how that kind of shakes out as we go toward,
honestly,
you know, the end of the IPL.
Honestly, I think all these players are, I think it's the opposite side of the spectrum where they're all, like, overworked because they're, like, the Big Match League went on, the Pakistan Premier League, the West Indies Premier, the Caribbean one went on, South Africa one went on. A lot of them actually, like, all these players actually have been playing, whether it be for their national side or, you know, for these domestic leagues. So I actually don't know if, like, they're still fresh. That bubble always just, you know, affects people mentally, traveling in a bubble, all these restrictions. And I honestly don't know, or maybe you can, like, just look this up, but what are the vaccination rates for, like, athletes worldwide, cricket worldwide?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. We'll find out soon enough, because I think ultimately they will eventually disclose those numbers. I think for the most part, the cricketers that I've been seeing have gotten the vaccine. I know a handful of Indian cricketers have gotten the vaccine. Most of the New Zealand contingent has the vaccine. Most of the Australia contingent also has the vaccine. Again, vaccine distribution is something that, you know, a whole different topic, but I think for the most part, the athletes understand the role that they're playing and understand the situation. So I think for the most part, the athletes have gotten their vaccinations. But we'll see what happens ultimately when the IPL restarts and when the T20 World Cup ultimately gets underway in UAE. That's going to do it for us here on the Follow On Podcast. Be sure to check us out on Facebook and Twitter. And as always, on followoncricket.com.